Welcome in, latest episode of that SEC podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. Go by SEC Mike on the Twitter streets. And we're joined by our great friend, Stephen Lassen, senior editor over at Athlon Sports. Stephen, how's it going, my friend?
Mike, we're hanging in there, right? It's a Monday, and I know everybody's excited about basketball, but it is great to see some college football spring practices either getting underway, seeing coach talk out there about what's to come this spring. So, man, I'm missing college football. I'm just ready to see some actual like footballs flying through the air. If it's an offensive line drill, sign me up. I'm ready for it.
Yeah, and just be forewarned. So we had Marler on the show. We talked basketball. I will never ask Steven any basketball questions because he's football 24/7, like I know the vast majority of you are. So again, shout out Steven. He came up with the show topic for today. We're going to talk the biggest question marks in the SEC this spring, and kind of, if those don't get answered, how does that affect the team potentially? If you got playoff hopes, if you got bowl hopes, if you want to have a winning record, on and on and on. Can that be accomplished if we do not get a resolution to these question marks we have in the spring? Stephen, what made you want to jump into this topic?
Mike, I think the biggest thing is, you know, we're all kind of, I know, like I mentioned, everybody's into basketball, but I'm football 24/7 with spring practice starting up. It gets me thinking about the upcoming season and seeing some spring top 25s. And you and I have been talking about optimism and questions all off season. So it got me thinking, you know, now we're at the point where the portal from the first window is pretty much closed. We've had obviously the signing days. We know what the rosters look like. The coaching situations are, you know, sort of solidified across the board. I think we have a pretty good idea of what these teams are. And so that starts to lead me to now we can officially kind of start to drill into some of these specifics on some of these teams and what it means for this upcoming season.
Yeah, Connor just kicked me right where it hurts, Stephen. Or excuse me, Cotton. Appreciate you, Cotton. Mike, great interview with Bobby Burton. Go check it out if you haven't. He came in studio. First time we did a in-studio interview in a long while. And it was fantastic conversation. Unfortunately, the audio's trash. I've seen all the comments. People are emailing me. People texting me. You know, great interview. But did you know you forgot to record the guest? It's not quite that bad, but I don't know what the hell happened. The recorder just didn't record fully. This literally never happened. But of course it happens when I have a tremendous gift, guest in studio. But I appreciate you checking it out at least, Cotton. And sorry for you were yelling at your phone or computer or whatever the hell you were listening to with the audio. So that's on me. But again, go check it out. We got a lot more coming because SEC tournament. I know Steven is like seething right now. We're talking basketball. We got the basketball tournament upcoming, so we're lining up some great guests in studio. Well, I'll double mic them this time, so there's no issues this time around. And Cousin Shane is going to be in on virtually every interview, so that's going to be a great time. But all right, Stephen, so how do you want to do this? I mean sometimes people get upset when we do alphabetical, so what do you say we just go in a random order? And then if a cousin wants to donate, which is totally optional, no donation required. If you throw us a donation, let us know your team. We'll throw them to the top of the list. How does that sound?
Mike, I think that's a great idea. I think let's go in a random order. And that way we don't start with a playoff team first in Alabama. Well, let's just pick a random team here. But hey, by the way, Mike, you know, I think whatever it was last week, I think the audio issues kind of like affected both of us. Cause remember, I couldn't figure out how to work the mic to start the show. So I think that's my fault. I just kind of passed my ways of error onto you.
Apparently we are in spring mode as well, right? You know, we're just gearing up. We're trying to perfect this thing for the fall, but all right. How about this one, Stephen? Let's go with a fan base that is very much anticipating 2025 after a terrific 2024, and I'm talking about the South Carolina Gamecocks, Stephen, coming off a 9-4 season, really 10-3 because they got robbed the LSU game. But a big year for Shane Beamer and company, year 5 for Beamer, playoff hopes out there for the Gamecocks. Oh, what is your biggest question mark for them Gamecocks?
Mike, I've got two sort of areas that I'm really watching this spring. And one of them is kind of combined two things into one, and it's the line of scrimmage. I think we'll start there for South Carolina. Three new starters on the interior. Also, four defensive tackles who played major snaps last year are gone. The SEC's line of scrimmage league, you look at that schedule, you start thinking about, can this team get to the playoff? Certainly, Lenora Sellers has the ability to elevate this team to the playoff, but you're talking some pretty heavy losses on the line of scrimmage to go with a difficult schedule. Part two of that is what happens at receiver. And I think you have to be kind of optimistic that maybe Nick Harbor, maybe Jared Brown, some of those guys take a step forward. But if you expect Lenora Sellers to take that next step forward as a passer, you're going to need some help at receiver. So I'm a big believer in Lenora Sellers and his ability to elevate this team, but line of scrimmage and receivers loom very large this spring.
Yeah, I think you make, that's right where I wanted to go, Steven, receivers. I mean, I think that's kind of your standout, but in the SEC, we all know you got to be strong on the line of scrimmage. And South Carolina gave up 41 sacks last season. That ranked 123rd in the country. And I think we can all admit it'd be a lot higher number if not for Lenora Sellers being such a dynamic athlete and can, you know, when the pocket breaks down, he can go loose. I mean, 9 out of 10 quarterbacks are probably not the athlete he is. So that number is a little deceiving, even if you ask me. So, I think of if I had to pick one or the other, Steven, I think I'd go defensive line because of how many veterans they had. Kyle Connard was just lights out. And I never in a million years would imagine he was going to be that caliber SEC defensive player of the year by some metrics, including that's who I would have given the award to if I had a vote. So Dylan Stewart's, he may be even better. He probably is, but you know, he can't carry the load by himself. So defensive line, receiver, offensive line, those are huge issues for South Carolina that that we got to get resolved. Now we've got what's his name, Josiah Thompson on left tackle. He could be elite. So I'm not saying it's like an awful line, but going from year one to year two, if you got left tackle figured out, you're doing better than the vast majority of college football right out the gate.
It feels like if you wanted to take the optimistic route here with these positions, you could say Nick Harbor just gets a lot better. Jared Brown stays healthy. He makes an impact. You also look at the offensive line. You mentioned Thompson. If he's a standout left tackle, that starts to solve a lot of your question marks. And they brought in three starters or potentially three starters from the transfer portal, including some guys who will help right away on the interior. And of course, on the defensive side, you look at a guy like Hardy, the top JUCO kid, could step in and play right away. But still, that is a lot of senior leadership to be losing on the defensive front. And you mentioned Stewart. You know, it's not only just losing your other end to Kyle Connard takes the pressure off him, but now you got to worry about what happens on the interior, and that just allows offensive lines to focus more on stopping Dylan Stewart. So there's a ton of questions here for a team that is very much a playoff contender. Some optimism, but that line of scrimmage to me looms very large if they want to make the playoffs this year.
And then this guy, he may not be a popular name because of how his Gamecock career ended, but Nick Inamwari, it sounds like he may have performed himself into the first round. You know, let's say he is a first round talent. That's going to be hard for South Carolina. I know they still got DQ Smith, who's a very good player, but that is a underrated loss for them as well, I would think.
Absolutely. I thought maybe at times he was underrated in the SEC and certainly on a national level, and he tested incredibly well at the combine. And I think it kind of compounds with the question marks up front. Like if you're not getting as good as the pass rush this year, if there are some questions on the interior, you got some questions maybe at secondary, maybe how does that new group mesh? You could easily see like how these question marks start stacking up for South Carolina. But, you know, they have done well in the portal. It feels like Beamer and the staff will do a good job of finding the right mix here. But certainly I think that this team with the schedule, there are some questions they have to address up front.
Hey, shout out Cousin Ben. We asked for donations, Steven. Then we started talking Gamecocks, and then he gave us a donation. So, man, we started before. I appreciate it, Ben. Let's do Georgia. He gave us a $20 donation. So let's go. Let's go heavy on them dogs, Steven. They never have many question marks down in Athens, but what are the biggest question marks for Kirby's team heading into 2025?
Mike, I'm going to start with a very big picture kind of statement almost for what I'm looking for Georgia in spring practice. And that is simply, how far does this defense grow with its young defenders? Because you kind of look last year, sixth in the SEC in yards per play in SEC only games. So kind of a step back for Georgia's defense with the young quarterback on the other side, which is a storyline too. How does Gunnar Stockton grow into this job? Four new starters on the offensive line. But defensively, I'm looking for the growth from players this offseason, like KJ Bolden. He could be an All-American. What kind of impact does Elijah Griffin make in his first offseason at Georgia? True freshman up front. You know, it's not necessarily easy for true freshmen to make an impact. We did see Dylan Stewart last year. But Georgia's got to get back to finding some guys who can make a difference in the trenches. And not only that, look at who they lose in the pass rush, like Jalen Walker, Mykel Williams. There are more questions here for Georgia, but also it's hard to get too worried sometimes when you see the level of talent that's just waiting in the wings behind some of the guys they've lost.
Mm-hmm. And how much of those, again, it's not like their numbers were awful, but the step back in some defensive categories, Steven, how much of that you think is possibly maybe the toughest schedule with Clemson right out the gate, which they dominated Clemson, which went on to win the ACC. It's, you know, you can laugh at this because we saw where they were at the end of the year, but at Kentucky, for whatever reason, Kentucky's always plays Georgia very tight. At Alabama, at Texas, at Ole Miss, who was expensive for the playoff as soon as they won that game. And they played another playoff team, Tennessee. So, you know, some of that could be the schedule. Don't you think if they played Ole Miss schedule, I don't think their defensive numbers would have been that bad.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point, Mike. And I think looking at this year's schedule, you know, when you get a Alabama, you're getting Texas at home. Of course, Florida's a neutral site. It's still a difficult schedule, but two of your tougher games take place at home. So I think it's kind of 50-50 for me. I believe in the young talent. I wonder how long it takes to get to them, to that elite level. But at the same time, you're looking at, yeah, the schedule was hard last year, but you're losing so many key pieces. How does that balance out? But you also just keep coming back to the fact that they just have so many four and five stars waiting to step into the wings. And then on the other side of the ball, I think the offensive line is not only just how does it mesh, but also that pertains to the run game. You know, getting that run game back on track this year and to help the young quarterback, especially early in the season when you're going to play Tennessee and Alabama in the month of September. So some interesting spots here for Georgia to watch in spring practice.
Yeah, and that last thing, that was exactly where I wanted to go with Georgia, Stephen, was the running game. Because last season was the first time under Kirby Smart that Georgia's passing had more yards than his rushing. And with Gunnar Stockton taking over for Carson Beck, I know he's not very popular in Athens. for all I know, you've upgraded at quarterback. I don't know if that's accurate, but we'll say that to appease Ben for giving us $20. But the point I'm trying to make here is Gunnar is not going to throw it all over the yard every game. You know, you're going to need a running complement, I would think, for him. Especially early on, but like you said, at Tennessee, Alabama, right out the gate, first 4 weeks of the season. So, you know, unless he's lighting it up throwing, which he could, which, you know, they've upgraded at receiver, Noah Thomas and Branch and Oscar Delp, you know, he's got weapons. I'm not saying he doesn't get weapons, but it just feels like Kirby's DNA. He wants his defense to face less snaps. How do you do that? You ground and pound, you control the line of scrimmage, you take longer drives on offense, and then that'll just complement Kirby's defense. So to me, it's the running game. And with that, Mike Bobo, maybe we should have led with this, Steven. What was your thought? It's just so hilarious. Mike, you know, the Mike Bobo conversation. I think it was the Athens Banner Herald. It was like, we just found out they signed Bobo to a 3-year deal. You know, so it's like these coaches' contracts aren't written on toilet paper. They mean nothing. But Georgia fans I saw have been freaking out. They're like, we got him for 2 more years. Not necessarily, but thoughts on all that and thoughts on if I think it was Paul Feinbaum when he said, hell, I think they could get a better offensive coordinator down the street. And he's talking about the Georgia Tech guy, which that may be true. But I don't feel like Mike Bobo's the problem. Do you?
I don't. I don't think he is as good as Todd Monken is.
Right.
Which is the problem. Todd Monken might have been the best play caller in college football. And when you go from that to Bobo, there's always criticism of the offensive coordinator. But I also think creativity, it felt like Monken was just more creative. So I think that will be something to watch. I do think, you know, when you look at that Georgia offense from last year, 4.98 yards per carry in SEC games in 2023, down to 3.6 last year. So I think Gunnar Stockton is going to be fine eventually here. And I think their receivers will actually catch the ball most of the time this year. I don't think they'll lead, you know, the country in drops. It really does come on down to like, what do you get out of Nate Frazier? What do you get out of this run game? Offensive line, staying in manageable situations. And then over the season, your offense can take on more as Gunnar Stockton gets more acclimated. So I think just in the big picture for Mike Bobo, if Gunnar Stockton takes that big step forward, obviously a lot of criticism will dissipate. If it doesn't, you know, I'd be shocked if he coaches out that 3-year contract extension at Georgia. Yeah.
But and Texas, to my understanding, I could be wrong, Steve. I think the 3-year came prior to last season. So he's got 2 more, but again, I'm saying, yeah, if they don't win it all this year, he's probably gone. You know what?
I think that's fair. Yeah. Like you said, Mike, I mean, these contracts, they're not binding by any means. So many of these coaches, look at head coaches, how many of these guys get bought out. So mm-hmm. I would be surprised if Georgia struggles again, if he's back in 2026.
Well, you know who their word, their contract, if you will, is worth something. That's JR. Come on. Cousin JR, he just gifted 5 memberships, Steven, to Will Butler, CLPN, Terminator 98, John Lee, Kale Livingston. You have all been gifted memberships. Welcome to the family. Thanks to the legend, JR, never misses a show. We appreciate you, buddy.
See the Heisman front runner for us this year?
He's already won it by book. Right. You know
what? Forget, you know, every year it seems like there's a player in a spring game that does really well and everyone kind of expects him to play when really he was probably like second string. But like there's no offseason, you know, Heisman award in those games. We're just going to give it to JR.
Yep. All right, let's go. Man, I'm seeing a lot of Texas in the comments. So let's give them a break here. They need some attention here, Steven. How about Texas? Biggest question marks for those Longhorns who, yes, they lost a lot on the offensive line, Steve, but they want it to be known they did not attack the portal. So they got faith in their young offensive linemen. Where are you going with Texas?
I was actually going to start with the offensive line, Mike. You know, they did chase after Emmanuel Pregnon, the offensive lineman from USC, when he hit the portal back in January. So I don't think you could necessarily rule out a offensive line transfer if the right one hit the portal. But I think you could look at some of the pieces with Goosby and Baker and DJ Campbell coming back. They have the foundation to be really solid here. But also you're protecting potentially the best quarterback in college football. And if you want to contend for the national championship, you better be strong on the offensive line. So I would start with the offensive line because you're protecting the franchise.
Yeah. And I think Stephen he's being kind when he says they might have the best quarterback, because we already seen his quarterback rankings. We have seen other outlets jump on the Stephen Lassen bandwagon, calling Arch the best quarterback in the country. Not saying I agree with that, but could very well. Again, Bobby Burton in studio. Go check it out, even if you can't hear Bobby half the time. He's got me convinced that Arch Manning is going to be elite as well. So I think Stephen was ahead of the curve there. But, yeah, this is going to be fascinating. Stephen, Texas, do they have the staying power? Again, the narrative was, can they compete in the SEC? They damn near dominated everybody not named Georgia in the conference. Do they have the staying power? Now that's the critique, I guess. But I can't wait to find out. And that game against Ohio State is going to tell us a lot, isn't it?
Oh, man, it is. I mean, it's the defending national champion against a Texas team that could be the preseason number one. And you're talking about three of the best players. There's probably more on the field in one field. I mean, Jeremiah Smith, Caleb Downs, Arch Manning going to be All-Americans this preseason. So, I mean, it's just a fascinating battle of individual, but also what we could see this twice during the regular season with the playoff. But if you start looking at Texas and some of the other areas where I think they could use, you know, or at least what we're watching this offseason, they have some turnover at receiver. You know, how does someone like Ryan Wingo step up into that number one role defensively? Some losses up front and in the secondary. I think Texas feels pretty good about where they are based upon what they've added in the portal. But still, some losses along the line of scrimmage. And especially when you have a quarterback that's as good as Arch Manning going on the road in week one to play Ohio State and going on the road to Georgia. That is one group that you want to make sure you have solidified.
Mm-hmm. Man, Steven. Well, no, let's stick on Texas for a second before I attack old cousin Chad down here. But could. Now, this is a big if, but could Georgia and Texas, could that be the best new rivalry in the SEC after they went against each other twice? They're going to go against each other again, obviously, next season, at least once in Athens. Could be twice again if they do the SEC championship or playoff, maybe even a third time. Could Texas, Georgia, could that be the emerging rivalry in the conference?
You know, I hadn't thought about that, but it does make a lot of sense, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Because of the sort of uncertainty right now with Alabama, LSU, Oklahoma, Texas A&M, like there's a really, or Florida too. So, and not to mention right. Just the Kirby versus Sark, the battles and X's and O's between those two offense and defense. So yeah, I think that's a pretty strong candidate.
All right. Now I can attack Chad. All right. Here's cousin Chad. We appreciate the comment. I'm glad Bobo left South Carolina when he did. He's probably a wonderful person, but I don't think he's all that good of a play caller. Seriously. Now, this is what we call, Steven, living in hindsight and Bobo, because here's how I remember it. You tell me if it's different, Steven, but do you recall, Steven, who was the offensive play caller that followed Mike Bobo?
That was, that was not, was that Marcus Satterfield? I'm trying to make
your
sure.
Your favorite yes. coach yes, in right. the world, as well as every Gamecock out there, Marcus Satterfield, who they wanted burned at the stake. And again, Mike Bobo, is he the best play caller in the country? Of course not. But he's pretty damn good. And I think he's engineered the highest scoring Georgia offense of all time. And they had a guy, I believe his name was Kevin Harris, who was like a beast of a running back that nobody wanted. And he turned that guy in. I think he led the SEC in rushing. And then Bobo left, and the guy, he couldn't do shit after. I mean, he might as well not even been there. He was that effective. So, again, you could talk trash about Mike Bobo, and that's fine. But then you followed up with Marcus Satterfield, who set your program back 4 years. You know what I mean? So maybe we think about these things before we throw someone down the river. That's just my thoughts on that.
I always thought Will Muschamp had a very lackluster record at hiring offensive coordinators, but I thought Bobo was one of his better ones.
You could have stopped at a lackluster record. Right. But yes, it was every year at Florida, wasn't it? It was like,
yeah.
If I only had Kurt Roper when I started, if I only had Charlie Weiss, wasn't that another one of them? Like, yeah, what an idiot.
But why would you think Charlie Weiss would be a good offensive coordinator?
All right, how about this one, Steven? Back on topic here. We could bash Muschamp all day. How about a team with serious playoff implications here, Steven? LSU. How about that? I mean, these Tiger fans, it's playoff or bust for them, but they've got some questions that need to be answered.
Absolutely. I think the playoff should be the goal or the expectation for LSU this year. You've got one of the best quarterbacks in college football and Garrett Nussmeier coming back, plus just where Brian Kelly is in his tenure. So I think there are two areas that are probably the ones to watch in spring. I think the first one is going to be offensive line. You're turning over two standout tackles. You've got some other transition on the interior. You brought in some guys from the portal, kind of like Arch Manning. You're protecting your most valuable asset. So how does that offensive line hold up, especially week one against Clemson? But on the other side, I think how far does this defense progress? Because if this defense can take another step forward, they cut their points per game allowed in SEC play by almost a touchdown from 2023. So there was some progress on this side of the ball, but you need another step forward if you're going to make the playoffs. So I think how much does this defense improve plus offensive line development is what I've got my eye on this spring.
Yeah. For me, it's all about the defense. Once again, I mean, how can we have this bad of a lackluster? And again, not to bring up bad memories, but, you know, just looking at this schedule, Steven, it's like, oh my, do we not know quarterbacks can run the football in 2024? LSU apparently had no damn clue that they could do that. Southern Cal, they came up short, obviously. You know, they just went right down the field on them, if I remember, to win the game. Marcel Reed looked like he's going to win two Heismans that night. Milroe looked like $1 million. And then losing to a true freshman quarterback. I mean, it's just defense for me. It's all about the defense and a little bit the receivers, because I think I was proven a little bit wrong last year, Stephen, but particularly with Texas. But Texas was able to bring in a lot of transfers that hit. But more often than not, it's just, you know, this is a very short time we have to really judge these things. But yet you add guys via the portal, it usually takes them 2 years before they are the players you hope you're getting. You know what I mean? Like, very few guys day one, unless it's like a running back or a massive upgrade at quarterback. And even the quarterbacks, like a Jaden Daniels, it was really that second year where they really saw their full potential. So can LSU just blow up the receiving core, bring in these transfers, and they're just going to be elite? I don't know. That's a real question, particularly like Nick Anderson, who didn't even play last year because he was so injured. I'm not saying he's a bad player, but is he going to come in and score 10 touchdowns like he did as a true freshman year at Oklahoma? I kind of doubt that. Now, if he's there for 2 years, I think he can be that guy in 2 years, if that makes sense. But so receiver on offense, I think, is a big question mark for LSU. But it's all the defense, particularly with guys like Perkins and Whit Weeks coming off injury. They're expected to be completely fine, to my understanding. And I've heard some speculation about these the Florida State linemen that are all, I think, one's at Oklahoma, one's at LSU. Now we're looking at those guys as saviors. I think FSU thought they were saviors, and then they were part of sinking the Titanic. So I don't know. There's a lot of what ifs there for LSU, I really do think.
Yeah, and also the loss of Bo Davis to the NFL, Kyle Williams, of course, he's a LSU legend taking over. I wonder how that, you know, that transition works out. One thing on the receivers, Mike, I got my eye on Chris Hilton because the way he closed the year, two catches for 85 yards against Oklahoma, but it was that bowl game where he caught four passes for 113 yards and looked like the guy that could really be a field stretcher for this LSU offense. So if receivers are definitely a concern, but Aaron Anderson, plus a Chris Hilton stretch in the field, plus Nick Anderson, Barry and Brown. Like, I like what they've got going on there. And then, of course, you can kind of flip it around to the other side. Like, what does Harold Perkins do in the star position this year? Like, how can Blake Baker maximize his talent? Because he's just too talented to be invisible in the pass rush or however they want to use him. So I think Chris Hilton, Harold Perkins, those two players, how LSU can maximize their potential is very important to the season.
Yeah, but I am very concerned, Stephen, that we're sitting here with another position for Harold Perkins saying maybe this is the year. with a complete, I mean, maybe he'll have it mastered, but he's not even practicing because he got injured. It is my understanding in spring. So how quickly can he get that down? I don't know. I'm kind of dubious of that, but again, rooting for him because he was awesome as a freshman. And if we get that level of him at a nickel position where he can blitz, he can cover, he can do all these things, he'll be a hell of a player. But I've been hyping him up for 3 years now. And it just hadn't been the same. You know what?
Also, yeah, for sure. And also need to get back to being DBU. Yeah. You know, better secondary, like maybe that's DJ Pickett coming in as a true freshman. Some of the other guys stepping up. I mean, that, as much as I really have been buying some LSU stock, there are definitely still some questions in the back of my mind of just how this all fits together.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know one thing, if you're any of these teams, Steven, that has a huge question mark this spring and you want to relax, you want to not have it on the forefront of your mind this spring, you should go on over to Cornbread Hemp. Come on, they're back for another week. Cornbreadhemp.com/SEC or just use SEC at the checkout at oldcornbreadhemp.com. What is this Cornbread Hemp, you ask? It is CBD, and they also have the THC gummies. This is a small business out of the great state of Kentucky. They'll hook you up like they've hooked us up before. I love the CBD sleep gummies. They help me sleep throughout the entire night. I'm a guy that was always waking up in the middle of the night, Steven. I take some of these. You only need one sleep gummy, and boom. Next thing I know, it's 8:30 in the morning, and I've overslept the alarm, and I feel amazing. You know what I mean? So I'm just kidding. You won't oversleep, but you'll get the sleep you need with these cornbreadhemp.com/SEC. Well, what's that get you? That gets you 30% off your entire order over at Cornbread Hemp. Which coach you think most needs some Cornbread Hemp this spring, Steven, if you had to pick one coach?
That's a good question. I was almost going to go with the home state there of Cornbread Hemp and Mark Stoops. Question marks everywhere, bad season, fan bases on him. Mike, I will say, I think we all could use some of that Cornbread Hemp after the time change. It has been a rough go of it here in the Lassen household with the time change. I don't know about anybody else.
Yeah, I heard you say that, and I was like, maybe I'll send Steven some old Cornbread Hemp. He'll be sleeping good this fine March. You know what?
Especially when you have a one-year-old in the house that doesn't throw off their whole sleep cycle. So
yeah, so put the bourbon down, Stoops. Get you some Cornbread Hemp, and don't forget that promo code SEC for 30% off your full order. All right, Steven, how about, Here's a good one. How about, like, throwing up the schedules? So I'm teasing everybody here. Oklahoma, a lot of question marks, basically on all one side of the football. But what of the many questions? And quite honestly, they got defense figured out. They got special teams figured out. But what is the biggest question mark for you for them Sooners going into year two in the SEC?
I feel pretty good about the defense, kind of as you alluded to there. I think the biggest question for this team, obviously, it starts at the quarterback position. Like, what do you get out of John Mateer in his SEC debut? But I think if we zoom out for a second, certainly new OC, new quarterback, all of the new stuff, how does it mesh? But I think got to get down to the basics here. Like, how does the offensive line look? I mean, it was such a mess last year. They've got four starters back. But I would expect that there's probably going to be some mixing and matching with the transfers, and I'm sure Bedenbaugh will be working some guys around different spots this spring. So I think, Mike, all of it comes back to is the offensive line at a much more capable level, and that allows Mateer and Arbuckle to be able to use the entire offense this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's all about the offense, no doubt. But let me ask you this, Steven. And this shouldn't be a concern at all, but it is pretty interesting with Brett Venables taking over the defense of play calling. And he said, I don't know if you caught all these, I bet you did, but you know, I basically said, hey, this is what I do best. And I'm back. You know, I believe in myself. I believe in this team. I'm going to run it. And he said, well, hell, I didn't do it last year. And look what happened. So there's fairness to that. And if we're just talking defensive play callers, he's probably at worst, like two or three in the whole country. He may be number one. You know, Kirby's up there, obviously. But any concern that he'll just have too much on his plate come the season, because again, if you know, there's just so many things that go into it, and I don't know where are you at with that. Could Brent Venables be taking on too much here?
I think so, but if your back is against the wall, and you may not have a job if you go 6-6 or 5-7, I think it's a worthy gamble if you're Brent Venables. I mean, we saw Clark Lee do this last year, and mm-hmm. it worked out well for Vanderbilt, especially in the defense. If anything, I think Ben Arbuckle, with the track record he has, it's a good spot for like the autonomy position. Like, he has autonomy over the offense. He can do what he wants. You know, Venables is going to want to play a certain style, and, you know, obviously he's not going to want to put his defense on the field for 700 snaps a week. But I do think if you're in a make or break year, you almost bet on yourself. And I think that's what Venables is doing. I love the quote, by the way. He's like, well, that's what I'm good at. Like, it's just
right.
It's like I said, it's taking matters into your own hand in a make or break year.
And do you buy into all off season? I'm sure they're not walking around campus and people are like, you suck, you know, but everybody else in the conference is like, you see it in the comments, like the new Nebraska, Oklahoma ain't ready for this, yada, yada, yada. And I would imagine when the media poll, and this is not necessarily who the hell cares, the media poll, and I vote in it, we're always dead wrong. But people are going to look at this schedule, Stephen, and they're going to say, oh, goodness, Oklahoma would be lucky to go 6-6. You know what I mean? So just projecting out, you know, that 6-6 or 5-7 or whatever people project, that is probably... I mean, I'm just kind of guessing here, but of the 16 teams in the SEC, that's probably good for like 13th, 12th. Yeah. You know what I mean? So let's give them the benefit of the doubt, Steve. Let's say 12th. You know, do you buy anything that this team is going to be hearing about how, you know, you're the 12th best team in this damn conference? Could that provide some motivation to prove everyone wrong? Because I also think that this is the team, I think, in the SEC that could surprise people the most.
Yeah, I agree with both those points, Mike. I think, first of all, the potential to surprise is there, because I think just Oklahoma, just a very, very proud like football program, like losing seasons. There's two in the last 3 years, and you go back to the Bob Stoops era, it's like the only two that they've had. I mean, losing seasons, I know Big 12, SEC, totally different. They're not going to be short on resources to try to turn this thing around. And I also think we saw this in after Venables' first year when they went 6-7. The next year they rebounded to 10 victories. And I think you'll see a lot of that same sort of motivation being used, that they can turn this around. They'll be picked low. I've already seen it. They're picked low. The schedule's too tough. Brent Venables is going to be a defensive coordinator somewhere in 2026. So I imagine that all of that will be used as motivation, and rightly so. So I would expect Oklahoma to be using that, much like Vanderbilt did last year, where not many people gave him a chance to get to a bowl game, and same thing with Arkansas as well.
Yeah, and another one, Florida. I mean, we had Billy Napier run off. You know, they won't make a bowl game. They went 8-5. Again, that's not a very good record for Oklahoma. 8-5, that's not what they shoot for. But if they win 8-5 next year, I think a lot of people would believe they have overachieved given that schedule and all the massive. I mean, again, they're not going to be happy with that, but I'm just saying that when they could be the team that does that, I really do think.
Yeah, I think Oklahoma and Auburn are probably the two that intrigue me the most from like a surprise angle for 2025. And also, too, you know, if you can turn things around next year, if you're Brent Venables, I would assume we have a different schedule rotation in 2026. So things could get a lot easier. And all of a sudden there's that potential to go 8 wins to 10 wins in 2026.
If they still give Texas the slate they give them, they give Oklahoma something similar, then I will call for some shenanigans, no doubt.
Who did Joe Castiglione or you know, maybe Oklahoma fans just blame Lincoln Riley, right? Yeah.
Hey, sure. Shout out Horton Hears You. Appreciate you, brother. Donation. I love the interview with Bobby Burton earlier. Hook him. Thank you, Horton. And I'm glad you were the one person that could hear it. So, yeah, that was a fun one. All right. How about, I'm seeing Cousin Tim in the comments. So how about we do Ole Miss, Stephen? They're a team with a lot of question marks, if you were asking me. Now, Lane Whiffen, he's got all the answers. So I don't think they have no questions if they're a fan. But I've got a lot of questions about Ole Miss this spring. Where do you see the biggest question marks for the Rebels as they go? They try to repeat as a 10 and hopefully 11 or more win team.
It's weird because they have so many holes to fill. Just four returning starters. But I think you could talk yourself into a few things. So I'm not that worried about quarterback with Austin Simmons stepping in. So I think that the two positions, and they're kind of tied together here. I think the run game, who steps up at running back, because we see Lane Kiffin usually churning out a very productive rusher, whether it's at Ole Miss or FAU recently, who steps up to be that guy? And also the offensive line, which was, I think, arguably the weak point of that team last year. They averaged less than 4 yards per carry in SEC games. So I think in order to take the pressure off of that young quarterback, who steps up to be the number one guy at running back? Also, what about the offensive line?
Yeah, that offensive line, that's really what kind of did them in, I think, and not having a premier running back. It's almost like they had one, and I don't know whatever happened to that guy. But, that short yardage goal line was a nightmare. Got to get that cleaned up. I'm really interested, Steven, because I'm wondering if this is a defensive program now. I really am, especially since we can't fake injuries anymore. How good is this defense going to be? Pete Golding losing all this talent to the NFL. Now, Pete Golding, I think he is an elite recruiter. I know it wasn't good enough for Alabama, but Alabama defense was in shambles. Meanwhile, Ole Miss was one of the best in the SEC last year. So who really won that? I'd say Ole Miss clearly did. But can they repeat the success they had without some of the marquee talent? They still got a ton of talent. Maybe not I think people are going to be surprised. I know Steven won't be when the draft comes around, but I think Ole Miss is going to have some high-level picks that people nationally are like, damn, they had some players down there at Ole Miss. And they might have a better collection of talent because they've been recruiting really well. People always look at the transfer portal when they look at Ole Miss, but they have been recruiting, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, really, really well. They may have a better collection of talent, but they don't have that star power, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. I think Walter Nolan, Chris Paul, there were a couple other guys. I mean, certainly J.J. Pegues with his short yardage specialist ability. And I love the highlights of him catching passes at the NFL Combine. That is going to be an awesome experiment in the NFL. But no,
I think Amos, another one.
Yeah, absolutely. They're high-end talent, I think, on defense and through the portal this year. I don't think that the high-end talent is there like a Walter Nolan or like a Chris Paul. I mean, Perkins, coming back, I think he's got a chance to be an All-American at linebacker or however they deploy him. But also this gets at kind of what I was trying to tie in with Austin Simmons is you're potentially losing a first, second, third round pick at quarterback in Jackson Dart. I'm not that worried because I think Austin Simmons is going to be good, but also I think I trust Pete Golding to figure this out as the season goes along. So if you feel good, even with the turnover, maybe they're not as good and Austin Simmons is good. What happens to some of that offensive line and rushing attack questions? Because I think they'll fill in the gaps on defense as they go, but the other side of the ball, especially up front, is my biggest concern right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you think Lane Kiffin though has, now he can always change back, but he's got this reputation as like some quarterback guru. And I know Jackson Dart, sounds like he is impressing a lot of people. He may be a first round pick. So this may go against what I'm saying, but I don't know. Are they still a passing program? Cause like you led with, I mean, they're like a rushing machine now in Oxford. So what does this offense look like if Austin Simmons is their best player? What do they still lean the run, or they go pass heavy, you think?
I guess the question I would have is, like, how healthy is, like, a Logan Diggs at running back? Kwon Lacy, they brought in from Missouri, I think is going to be a solid player. Maybe they also dip into the portal too. But I think to your point, with Caden Lee coming back at receiver, and I think they brought in with five or six guys at receiver from the portal, it kind of seems like to me they're going to be more of a passing team next year. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, but I thought that last year too. I thought they'd be prolific with all the wet. And then, of course, you know, Trey Harris got hurt, so that's part of it. Juice Wells didn't live up to the hype. Wasn't a bad player, but didn't quite live up to the hype. I thought with weapons of that caliber, I thought they could set records down there, and they fell short of that, you know?
Yeah, I did too, because I think coming into the season, I think they did finish first in the SEC in passing offense last year. It did feel like there was maybe another level in the preseason we thought that they may be able to get to.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't.
Well, another team that's in that similar vein, Stephen, is Missouri. What's the biggest question marks for the Tigers with new quarterback, new receiving core, a lot of newness there for Eli Drinkwitz and company?
I hate to be boring, but let's talk quarterbacks here, because I think when you look at that schedule for Missouri, there is a real chance that this team, with a favorable path, if things hit right on the roster, to make a run at a 10-win season and potentially the college football playoff. I think Bo Prabhula played really well at Penn State as sort of a change of pace, part-time player. What does he look like in the full-time role? On one side of it, he's got a lot of inexperience that's going to have to translate quickly to the SEC, but also Eli Drinkwitz, Kirby Moore, that's a pretty good offensive tandem. So I think you have some trust factor there in those two. So I think outside of quarterbacks, you know, I think on the quarterbacks, one more thing is, you know, does Prabhula just clearly claim the job this offseason? That's my question. And then the second one would be filling in the offensive line. Connor Tolleson, Caden Green, pretty solid on the interior. You've got some other holes to fill, including what could be a top 10 pick in the NFL draft at tackle. So I'd like to see what happens this offseason at those two spots, quarterback play and offensive line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, they're next to Ole Miss. They are 15th in offensive returning production. So not a great time to be breaking in a new quarterback with, you know, you'd like to be on the other end of that spectrum, obviously. But I don't know. Something was missing last year. So, you know, again, we're saying that we're grading them on a curve because of the expectations. It went 10-3. It's not like they were awful by any means, but what's your thoughts on this, Stephen? I don't know if you caught it or not, but last week we had Nate Edwards, Rockham Nation. Go check that interview out if you missed it. Really fascinating conversation on the Missouri Tigers. But he was making the point that Missouri always starts slow, that their scripted plays are awful, and that that old Kirby Moore, he's not much of a game planner in his opinion. He's more of the explosive plays that, which were there 2 years ago, you know, which looked like that was going to be the hallmark of the offense last year, was completely non-existent. But maybe focusing on the how slow they started, it's not exactly the recipe you want with so much newness on the offensive side of the football.
That's a good point. I mean, I think if we talk about like Oklahoma, and we almost think about it's like a microwave thing. Like you're taking all these ingredients and you're heating them up quickly. Whereas from Missouri, it feels like it might have to be a little bit of like a slow cook offensively. And so it worries me a little bit. Although when I look at their schedule, you know, second week of the season playing Kansas is going to be tough, but three home games to get ready for South Carolina, and then you get UMass before playing Alabama. That's about as favorable as it gets, even if you have to take some time. But I do think in the big picture, it is very mysterious to me that it took so long for the big plays to show up when you have guys like Theo Weiss and Luther Burden on your roster.
I mean, this is like a Sunbelt schedule before the second week of October. You know what I mean? Like, how in the world did this happen? But again, got to capitalize on it. You know what?
Absolutely. And that's what we kind of talked about going into the season last year for Missouri was coming off of the victory over Ohio State in the bowl game. So much personnel coming back. A lot of continuity. Even though they won 10 games, did they take advantage of it? Now you got kind of a second chance here. Also, I think expectations will be lower at outside of Missouri, because most, I think, are going to look at, well, Brady Cook's gone, Luther Burden's gone, and they'll probably pick Missouri probably pretty low. But given the schedule, given recent track record, if the quarterback hits, I think, you know, you can talk yourself into really believing in this team this offseason.
Yeah, I believe in them. And I also believe, Stephen, in Ridge Wallet. Come on, have you checked out these Ridge Wallets they sent us over? Shane and I, we each got a wallet. They also sent me a keychain. Cannot recommend a Ridge Wallet enough, Stephen. I know you're tired. You're so tired of those thick, you know, like fake leather. It hurts to sit down wallets. I've had one of those for years. I got myself a Ridge Wallet. Never again, Stephen, will I go back to that, to the, and save a cow too. I mean, we should be eating cows, not sitting on them, if you know what I mean. So head on over to ridge.com/SEC, or just put the promo code SEC in at checkout over at ridge.com, and they'll give you 40% off, Stephen. They're having their once a year annual salary over at Ridge. I cannot recommend a Ridge Wallet, Ridge Keychain more, Stephen. Gotta take advantage of this once a year anniversary sale over at Ridge Wallet. You will not be disappointed. Stephen, do you need to update your wallet game? I'm very curious.
I do. I actually told my wife this the other day while we were out getting groceries. I said, I need a new wallet. Well, so the Ridge Wallet must have been listening in.
We're going to send you a Ridge one just to get that. Fix what ails you. You know what I'm saying?
I need to. I think some of these SEC coaches might need a Ridge Wallet. All that buyout money coming after this year. If it all in there.
Yeah, we'll set Stoops one too.
Yeah. Stoops, Venables, Napier, Brian Kelly. I mean, at Mike, at 40% off. If you're one of these coaches, this is a good time to get one, right?
It is. And, you know, a team that gets about 40% of the ones they should. Let's do Auburn next, Stephen. Come on, it's Auburn. Biggest question marks for them Tigers. And all jokes aside, very, very sorry to hear about Hugh Freeze. He's got some cancer, but it sounds like he's going to knock it out of the park. He's going to be sounds like he's going to be just fine. So that's fantastic. But that being said, where's the biggest question marks for Auburn, Stephen?
I hate to be boring again and talk quarterbacks. But let's talk quarterbacks for the Auburn Tigers, because to me, this is the one position that will make or break the season. How good is Jackson Arnold, and can he play with a lot more consistency? Can he play with mistake-free ball that sometimes we didn't see out of Peyton Thorne? So I think, how good is Jackson Arnold right away? Does he look a lot different than we saw at Oklahoma? That's the key to the season. It all comes down to one player, one position, that's quarterbacks and Jackson Arnold.
And again, I know this is kind of like a little bit off topic, or not off topic, but off the, you know, the narrative of what we're going with the question marks of the team. But how big of a question mark is Hugh Freeze? Because, again, I mean, taking over play calling, you know, that was supposed to save everything. I thought they looked, you know, even worse at times. You know what I mean? So the talent shouldn't be an issue anymore. And quite frankly, at times, I mean, look at the beatdown they gave to A&M. You know, they thrashed Kentucky. I know it's only a 2-touchdown game, but they really thrashed Kentucky. I mean, they have a lot. They have more talent than they've been showing, and clearly that is a sign of poor coaching. But the talent's even better. How big of a question mark is the coaching on the Plains right now?
I think it's a huge question. I will say, in defense of Hugh Freeze, they were third in the SEC in conference-only games in yards per play last year, 6.1. But also, think about all the turnovers. Think about all the mistakes, penalties, weird play calls at times. Those things, it's almost like Auburn did a good job at times of stopping itself. And so they almost have to get out of their own way to be able to translate 6 yards of play into actual scoring touchdowns. So I think if you're Auburn, I think coaching questions, can you clean up some of that stuff? And a lot of that goes back to head coach and the coaching staff.
Yeah, and I thought this was a great comment from Cousin Mike here. I love Jackson Arnold, but he has to earn some confidence. Hugh Freeze may be the worst coach to move to, and I think that's a fair comment as well. Because again, maybe he, what did we hear? Do you remember hearing this? Because Shane and I like mocked it to no end. But it was Hugh and Peyton Thorne are like on. They're just synced up. You know, they were calling each other nonstop. They were finishing each other's sentences, on and on and on. So you think, oh, good Lord, these guys are tight as can be. And then the season rolls around and they're just throwing them under the bus 1 week after another. What kind of relationships are you going to have with Jackson Arnold? You know, I mean, if I hear they're close, I'm thinking, oh, buddy, this is going to be a nightmare. And that goes beyond the fact that also what they're saying in the comments, totally accurate. You know, Jackson Arnold has major turnover issues. What's been the problem at Auburn? Turnovers. You know what I mean? Like, to me, in some sense, it's the perfect fit. In others, it's like the worst fit. So, I don't know. I don't know. I'm fascinated to see how this plays out.
I think Hugh Freeze said it was like a natural fit, like at the Senior Bowl with Jackson Arnold coming in. I do worry about the fit. And I always I hate to almost use that word because we use it a lot in coaching searches. But I do think that's a great point about just needing confidence, especially with a coach that is probably about out of people to throw under the bus at some point. Like, you run out of coaches, you run out of players. And if Jackson Arnold has a little bit of an up and down start, he gets thrown under the bus and you have to throw in Deuce Knight. Maybe he's not ready. He gets thrown under the bus. I mean, what does that do for your transfer portal prospects of next year, regardless of whether Cam Coleman's catching passes or not at Auburn? So, I think that's an interesting dynamic that we're going to have to see how it plays out early in the year.
Yeah. All right. How about Tennessee? Come on down, Stephen. Biggest question mark. There's no question marks, really. Come on. Don't kid yourself. But if you had to pick at one, where is it going to be for them Vols?
I'd be curious to hear your answer to this, Mike, because I went with the skill positions and you could also throw the offensive line in here as well. Mm-hmm. With basically what 4 new starters coming in for next season. But I looked at the skill positions and you see the receivers and there's been some inconsistency at times last year. They're essentially starting over. Chris Brazel is back. You're kind of counting on guys like Mike Matthews to take a big step forward. But this almost reminds me of the defensive backfield. You know, they weren't very good. They started over. I don't know if the receiving core was as down as the defensive backs, but it worked out for Tennessee. So I think I'm curious, like, this new faces equal maybe a little bit better fit for the offense. And of course, who replaces Dylan Sampson? The heart and soul of that team last year, underrated nationally, almost 1,500 rushing yards, and was pretty much instrumental in leading Tennessee to the college football playoff.
You know who's going to replace Dylan Sampson? Nico.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
That's true.
Not to be cute, but it's like, that's they need him to be that guy. And obviously a different position, but just take over games and be a difference maker. That's what they'll need. But to answer your question, you know, skill position, certainly a question mark for Tennessee. I think they underwhelmed for probably the second year in a row there. So that is absolutely a great position to highlight. But I got to go offensive line because of how many new faces they're going to have there, because they're likely going to have to start a true freshman, David Sanders, who by some accounts is, you know, top offensive prospect, offensive tackle prospect, what have you, in the country. But that's fantastic until they got to get on the field. You know what I mean? And the big left tackle, I don't know. I mean, you got to have those guys, but to say he was not worth what they paid him. that's an understatement. You know what I mean? So he's got, and now he's the leader. Now he's like the, I don't want to say star because he's not a star, but he's like, he's their best offensive lineman. And if that's your best offensive lineman, you might have the worst damn offensive line in the Gavverts. You know what I mean? But hopefully Lance Hurd takes a big step forward. He better, because he's getting paid to. And again, let's say he is fantastic at left tackle. Let's say David Sanders is fantastic at right tackle, which is not a given. Neither one of those is a given. And coming in as a true freshman, very difficult to do. But you still got three other complete unknowns. And I just gave you two of the two, you know, what ifs here. So for me, it's all about offensive line.
I think you can basically pencil in the two transfers to Wendell Moe and Sam Pendleton as basically like interior starters somewhere, however it all works out. But that also gets at the questions here. Kind of as you put it, Lance Hurd with an up and down debut, you may start a true freshman on the other side. You're starting two transfers. That is a lot of new and transition in the nation's toughest conference to be, strong on the offensive line and line of scrimmage and how important it is. But also, I think just in the big picture for Tennessee, I think you think about how this team shifted. You know, it was Hendon Hooker in the high-powered passing game. Then it was Dylan Sampson in the defense. And now they're going to have to figure out what that formula is for this year. And I think you hit it. I think it's got to be Nico taking a big step forward. That also goes into the offensive line, the receiving core, both helping him take that big step forward.
Yeah, and this schedule, which admittingly is one of the most kind on paper in the SEC. If not, I think Missouri's a country mile easier. But this schedule does not set up to be like, well, we can figure it out in the first month. I mean, Syracuse will beat you. They got an outstanding coach. They exceeded all expectations, and it's on a neutral field. And then, of course, Georgia, which absolutely owns you. And owns everybody basically, except for Alabama for some reason. But again, if you've got major question marks, third game of the season, you're going to get smoked by Georgia. Which if you're, you know, I'm not predicting this, but I don't think it's like completely unrealistic that you're 1-2 after three games, and then all of a sudden you're in panic mode with nine more games to go.
Yeah, I could totally see, especially with Alabama still to come,
right?
Florida, Vanderbilt, Oklahoma. Tennessee's got a favorable schedule, but also there's not a lot of runway with two of your most important games in the first 6 weeks, plus an Arkansas team that beat you last year too.
Yep. Let's not talk about that though. Yeah. All right, so let's do Arkansas. Let's give them some love. All right, Steven, where would you go with the biggest question marks for them Hogs?
Mike, I think we could go a couple different directions here, because you look at both sides of the ball, there are question marks for this team. They lose a lot in terms of production offensively. So I want to focus in on the receivers for Arkansas, because they lost Andrew Armstrong. I think probably one of the most underrated players in the country, maybe last year, over 1,000 yards, a couple other losses, including Luke Haas, a totally new group of receivers coming into 2025, very heavy into the portal. That also looks at the offensive line questions for this team. Three starters are back, but how do all the pieces fit together? The good news is you've got a quarterback in Taylen Green who can elevate his play. His mobility probably helps offset some of those offensive line concerns. But if you're Arkansas and you want to take that step forward, you've got to help your quarterback. So I think offensively, those are where I have my eyes on this spring, is what names out of the portal have stepped up. How does that offensive line look as well? Because there are also a ton of questions on the defensive side to go with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I always say it, Steven, maybe I think Kiffin may have won this battle, but they call him the portal king. I've always thought Sam Pittman and company were the real portal kings, because they seem to always hit on a lot of these transfers that they bring in annually. So who's that next group? I don't know. Remains to be seen. But I heard someone talking about Arkansas recently, Stephen, and they basically said, well, who's going to catch today a ball? You know, I mean, like you said, all those guys are essentially gone. So you may have one of the better quarterbacks in the conference, but who's he going to throw to? You know, that's a huge, huge question mark for the Razorbacks. But yeah, a lot of turnover on both sides of the football. So this, and to go along with an incredibly, it's always difficult in Arkansas, but this year is even more difficult with Memphis and Notre Dame on the schedule. I don't know why we're doing this, but should make for some fun drama, no doubt.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a schedule that's very kind to getting bowl eligible, to be frank about it. If I was Arkansas, I mean, don't get me wrong, if I was an Arkansas season ticket holder, getting Notre Dame to Fayetteville would be pretty awesome. But at the same time, I think I'd be trying to schedule a few layups here and there to get bowl eligible. You know, you mentioned the receiving core. One name to keep an eye on, Omega Blake. He's an all-name teamer. He's from Charlotte. He averaged about 25 yards a catch at Charlotte last year. He could be a big-time deep threat for Arkansas. And I did want to mention, Mike, on defense, Landon Jackson's gone. Secondary wasn't very good last year. A lot of turnover there. So I think this is it's almost a spring at Arkansas where you're figuring a lot out. And I'm curious just overall, like, what names that they brought in through the portal are going to be the guys that they feel good about leaving the spring, and maybe they either have to go find some more help here or they feel good about what they brought in, offensive line, receiver, secondary.
Yeah. And Omega Blake, a name South Carolina fans should be familiar with. He was at South Carolina. So he's got SEC talent. He just had to go out there and prove himself at a lower level and then come back. So yeah, that's a good one, Steven. So I appreciate that. All right. I would appreciate it also if you talked your biggest question marks for old Texas A&M. Come on down, Steven. A lot of question marks after the way last season ended. We were looking like $1 million. Now we got to pick ourselves up off the mat. Year two, Mike Elko. Where's the biggest question marks for the Aggies?
I've got three positions I'm watching this spring. I think let's start on the defensive side of the ball. Texas A&M loses Nick Scorton. They lose Shamar Turner, Shamar Stewart. Three standout defensive linemen are gone. They dipped into the portal, but how does that group improve, evolve this offseason? Going to be one of my top storylines. Also, the secondary. I think Mike Elko made it very clear after the Las Vegas Bowl they had to get a lot better in the secondary this year. So, you know, Julian Humphrey, the transfer from Georgia, Jordan Shaw, the transfer from Washington. Do either of those two guys help solidify the secondary? But I think the biggest storyline for me this offseason is going to be the growth of the passing game with Marcel Reed. I mean, they're invested in him because you go out and get a couple receivers. Kevin Concepcion can play that all-purpose role. You've got a guy in, you know, some of the other guys they brought in, Mario Craver, who can also play sort of that deep threat, take the pressure off. With the running backs and offensive line that they have, if they can get Marcel Reed to take that step forward, I mean, this is a team that can be right there in the mix to be a top 15, top 20 team again and contending for the playoffs. So defensive questions, certainly. But I think it's got to work for Marcel Reed, and that's what I'm watching this spring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was watching Mike Elko. He was on with the great Josh Pate, and I thought it was fascinating to think about, Stephen. But he was asking him why A&M always gets all this talent, yet they're not seemingly represented in the draft. And I never really thought about that because I don't pay too much attention to the draft. But That is a fair question, and that doesn't mean it's all on Mike Elko. He's only been there a year as head coach, but clearly, and his response was lack of development, you know? So do you think we'll get more development under Coach Elko? What's your thoughts on that?
I do. I think over time, I think Elko would do a better job at maximizing and landing the talent. And obviously Fisher had the number one class. It didn't work out. I think Elko will do just fine at both of those, landing and also developing. That's really kind of, I always think about this. Building a team is almost like, can you land the talent? Can you develop it? And can you put it in the right positions based upon coaching hires? And it sort of feels like A&M can get all those ingredients. They just haven't been able to put them together at the right time. And I think Elko can. It just may take another offseason to get there. So,
because Mike says Jimbo was developing his $70 million buyout.
He needs one of those rich wallets.
But, yeah, and do you think there's something to be lessons to be learned? I don't know the way to say this, but just going 7-1, being on top of the world, being a lock for the playoff, being the favorite to go to the SEC championship, and then completely falling on your face. Can there be something to gain by Mike Elko telling his players, you know, that, to the effect of, you know, you better buy in, you got to do it my way, otherwise this isn't going to work. Could they spin it that way perhaps?
Yeah, I think so. And I think he could also spin the fact that they were heading into November 30th with a chance to play for the SEC championship. And by that, I mean, look, I mean, in year one, we still have growth to do and we nearly made the SEC championship game. Like, that would be a selling point if I was Mike Elko. The other thing, when you look at their losses, there's nothing like alarming to me. I mean, you can look at the Auburn game and say, sure, they should have won. It's a week before playing Texas on the road. They played South Carolina after the LSU game. You could easily see how they just ran out of steam. I don't read anything into the Las Vegas Bowl loss because both teams were shorthanded. So, and Notre Dame, I mean, Notre Dame played for the national championship. There's nothing alarming there. I think the most concerning thing is they lost four out of their last five, and that's what they have to, our last impression is almost our strongest one. And that's what we're left with this offseason.
Mm. I was concerned with the second half of the South Carolina, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
That was highly concerning to me, but it is what it is. All right. How about, Steven, I know you love Alabama. Come on, Dan. What's your biggest question mark for the Crimson Tide?
I promise. I think we're almost out of quarterback options. We got to talk quarterbacks for Alabama, Mike. I mean, let's be honest. It's like LSU. It's college football playoff expectations for this team. And, the Jalen Milroe, Kalen DeBoer, Nick Sheridan marriage, it wasn't bad. It wasn't great. Now you've got three talented quarterbacks. They're all just unproven. So I think the biggest storyline for me this spring is which quarterback emerges, and it's probably to Kalen DeBoer's benefit, I guess, to not name a starter to try to keep all three in Tuscaloosa for the fall. So that's why you don't have quarterback depth issues. But to me, I just look at this roster and see one of the best defenses in the SEC. They've got good running backs, good receivers, offensive line's in pretty good shape. Sure, I would love to see more out of the pass rush. They only had 25 sacks last year, but it's all about quarterbacks to me.
If you had to rate it on a scale from 0, being obviously no chance, to 100%, where would you put it that Alabama makes the college football playoff?
I would say probably 60. I feel pretty good about this team. You know, we kind of ran through some of their strengths. There's not a lot of weaknesses. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean,
unless you want to say coaching.
I was thinking about it. Yeah. I was thinking about it. And yeah, they bring back a ton on the defensive side of the ball, but there was certainly some defensive lapses. Now, I think they'll probably be one of the better defenses in the conference, but you could convince me otherwise. And who knows what they have at quarterback. I know they're pretty loaded at receiver. They're bringing back second most receiving production. So, yeah, I mean, I get it. I get all the hype. But I certainly, I don't know. I don't know where I'm at here because I think they should get it done. Will they? They should have got it done last year. You know what I mean? But they lost to freaking Vanderbilt in Oklahoma, a really bad Oklahoma. So I don't know. I'm done giving Alabama the benefit of the doubt, if that makes sense.
It does. And especially kind of what we talked about earlier this offseason when it comes to Alabama was it always felt like one step forward, one step back last year. I do think Kalen DeBoer's second year, both at Fresno and Washington, his teams got better. Of course, Washington, they made the national championship. Now, they had a little bit more quarterback continuity. So, and that's the other storyline is, like, if this quarterback battle is close, I mean, I think you got to turn it over to Keelan Russell, right? I mean, if it's a dead heat between all three, the true freshman probably should win out. And you see how he develops.
Right. Unless he pulls a Milrow and it's turnover crazy. You know what I mean? And then all of a sudden they're like, man, this guy can't manage quarterbacks. You know what I mean? So he's in a dicey situation, but Zach, excellent point. Grubb, amazing offensive coordinator. I mean, maybe that in and of itself will solve any of the woes they had on the offensive side of the football last season.
I think it absolutely will. I was not sold on Nick Sheridan based upon what happened at Indiana. So this is a massive upgrade at OC. And it also, to our point on Brent Venables, mm-hmm. I think it takes probably some pressure off of Kalen DeBoer just on the workload aspect of it. He probably had to manage the offense maybe a little bit too much last year. Didn't work out. Now you've got one of your top lieutenants in Ryan Grubb coming back.
Well, speaking of pressure, finish, but there's still pressure, Steven, down in Gainesville. How about that Florida Gators? Biggest question mark, and should Florida fans be freaking out because DJ Lagway apparently will not throw and no one can figure out what in the world's going on and how serious his injury is?
It's a little weird, isn't it? I mean, I don't know if it's something to be overly concerned about it, but it's spring practice, I guess, and I guess we can maybe overreact to every little tidbit that we get. So I guess I'm a little bit concerned for Florida. I think I would probably go with the defensive line, Mike. I mean, they're losing a couple contributors, Cam Jackson, Des Watson, Pyburn, Searcy, and it's a defense that you felt probably turned a corner in the last four games. So can you pick up where you left off with needing some new faces to emerge? Obviously, guys, you know, like Graham and Childs, your two linebackers in last year's recruiting class, what roles do they play this year? How do they move them around if needed? So I think it's a defensive line conversation, but in the big picture is, does the defense pick up where they left off in those last four games?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, they made huge strides in the secondary last season, and then they lost their secondary coach and they lost some of that talent, run out of eligibility. So defensive line, certainly, I think secondary is a little bit of a question mark, given all the newness there on that side of the football and the fact that their coach went to Miami and basically said, they weren't prepared for old Cam Ward. You know, I mean, that's it kind of made him look bad, I thought, but it was an interesting comment nonetheless. But yeah, I think it's defense and how much of that. I don't want to say mirage because that's not fair, because they were a force there. Beat, you know, they solved Nussmeier. They made, if you remember, Jackson Dart, who again, he may sneak into the first round. He like went into self-destruct mode against them. And then of course the last two, they were just completely dominant over Florida State in Tulane. So maybe they have turned a corner on the defensive side of the football, but I've seen far more horrible performances by that defense under Billy Napier than I have good. So can we carry over that momentum? I think we're going to be fine on the offensive side of the football. For me, it's a lot of that defensive work.
Yeah. When I go through Florida's offense, I have a hard time. If the shoulder injury is not a big deal, I have a hard time finding a major concern. I mean, certainly you could point to Badger and DK are gone at receiver, but I really like J. Michael Sturdivant, the receiver, the transfer they brought in from UCLA. Eugene Wilson's back as well, healthy, it looks like. So I'm not too worried about anywhere on offense. It feels like if you're going to make the playoff case for Florida, it's Lagway is a significant step forward and the defense picks up where it left off plus some, and they're even better in 2025.
if Florida was to make a playoff run, Stephen, is there one game that you highlight here that most people would have Florida projected to lose, or Florida will be an underdog, however you want to state it, that they could win, that could be a difference maker, if that makes sense, in making or missing the college football playoff?
What about September 13th against LSU or September 20th against Miami? One of those two? Those feel like two games where Florida will be an underdog in, being on the road early in the season. I feel like if they could win either one of those, start 4-0 or 3-1, that sets you up, but still with Texas and Georgia to come, to certainly be in the playoff conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. I would go LSU. I think that's a great one. Or I think the real one that could take you to another stratosphere is Texas. If you beat Texas in the swamp after a bye, Texas will be going on a month. I think it starts for them. Yeah. A month of road games. So I don't know that the first one's any more difficult than any of the others, but they'll be playing basically an Ole Miss non-conference aside from Ohio State. So give me that one. I think, I'm not sitting here saying they're going to beat them, but I think if you can beat Texas at home, then we can really start that playoff narrative for Florida.
Absolutely. Also, I thought how they played, obviously the swamp is a tough place to play, but late in the season, picking off Ole Miss, picking off LSU, beating Kentucky, they beat Tennessee in, 2022 at home? So, 2023 at home. So, yeah, I mean, I think home games off of the timing of that game early in the season, maybe where Texas is still figuring things out, if you can beat LSU plus a Texas or Miami plus a Texas, you're in pretty good shape if you're Florida.
Mm-hmm. All right. How about Vanderbilt? What kind of shape are they in entering spring? They're already in spring here, Stephen. Biggest question mark the Commodores got to solve?
I think it's the offensive line. And I think it's not only just that they're losing four starters up front, but also if you go back to the end of last season and Diego Pavia getting banged up, the offense just wasn't the same and until he had that time off to get healthy for the bowl game. So I think if you're Vanderbilt, transfers, returning talent, however it works out, how does the offensive line mesh this offseason to help this offense take a big step forward again next year?
I want to see some receivers emerge to help this offense. Diego Pavia, I know they got Sowers. He's outstanding, the tight end. But I would really like to see it go to that next level, get a little bit more explosive on the offensive side of the football. And shout out the Kill Zone and company of Tim Beck. They seemingly have a never-ending playbook of tricks and things of that nature. But to really utilize it, I mean, I would love to see it if they had a little bit more speed and more toys for Diego Pavia to work with, so to speak.
Yeah, that's a great point, too. I mean, someone like Trent Hudson, you know, he was the former New Mexico State receiver. He was at Mississippi State. Now he's at Vanderbilt. I think he averaged whatever 15 yards a catch at New Mexico State in 2023. So, yeah, I mean, I think big playability, stretch the field a little bit more. Also, just if you can do that, maybe you don't have to ask Pavia to tote the rock X amount of times a game and keep him healthier for later in the season, too.
And they're bringing back so much production on the defensive side of the football. They ran out of gas, though. I mean, that's how I saw it late in the year. Carolina put up 28 on them, LSU 24, Tennessee 36. I mean, those are some solid teams. It's not like those are awful teams or anything. But I thought they looked the worst they had all year at the end of the season. I just think they kind of like ran out of, like I said, ran out of gas. So you bring back a ton on the defensive side of the football with Clark Lee giving up play calling. How does that defense look with so much production? Number one in the SEC and 75% defensive returning production. What's that next step they take? I think that's a huge question mark for Vanderbilt.
Yeah, it is. I mean, at the most basic level, we always think returning production and experience translates into improvement, but that's not always the case. So I think they actually have to make it work. at Vanderbilt next season with all the pieces and experience they have. They had only 15 sacks last year as well. I'd like to see a little bit more disruption. You know, sacks doesn't necessarily mean that you're not getting pressure, but I think there's a case to, you know, a lot of levels, they could just go up a notch or two, and all of a sudden you start talking about taking another step forward on the stat sheet next season.
Mm-hmm. Well, who needs to take a step forward here, Steven? No doubt is old Kentucky. Come on. Biggest spring question marks. They got the oldest roster, I think, ever assembled down there in Lexington as spring started on Monday. But did you hear the AD, Steven? He said, hey, just one bad year. I'm not panicking. This is a program on the rise here. What your thoughts on all that? As I think Mark Stoops is at my door.
Yeah, I don't know if I would go with program on the rise after the season that they had last year, but I think if I'm Kentucky, I think what would give me some optimism is the veteran roster that they've assembled through the portal. It's a situation where they don't have time to get up to speed. They don't have time to rebuild. You have a very senior, you know, high level experience class of transfers coming in. So I think certainly all that has a chance to pay off. But I think in the big picture, what we're watching this spring, it has to be just offense as a whole. Go position by position here. You know, there are major question marks on the offensive line, the big blue wall. Can they get that going again? Which maybe translates into a little bit more production in the run game. They brought in, you know, obviously a transfer running back to compete with Jamarian Wilcox, but Zach Calzada, how does he look at quarterback? You've got three of your top four receivers are gone from last year. So I, at the most basic level, Mike, it has to be just how does the offense grow when you average 14.1 points a game in SEC play? Everybody on that offense, including the coordinator, has something to prove this spring.
Yeah, and you know, this is not necessarily something we'll get in the spring, but I think it's got to start to be established in the spring, Steven, is effort and physicality. Because that was kind of like the DNA, the blueprint of Kentucky football under Mark Stoops when they were winning at their height, if that makes sense. So, I don't know. It just seemed like players were not – they just were not giving it their all, it seemed like to me, at time. And now at times they would, but – more often than not, like Ole Miss, certainly, you know, they out-physicaled Ole Miss, and they made the play that mattered. But far often than not, they did not give that kind of that effort. And I hate to keep repeating myself, but that's kind of like what separated, I thought, Mark Stoops' program from everybody was just, you know, just a gritty toughness and not making the mistakes. And I haven't seen that in a while.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And also, I wonder how much of the sluggishness, if you will, on offense played a role in some of that, maybe on defense. You know, if you think you can only score 13 points a game, once the game gets out of hand, I guess, you know, does it show up? It also is kind of a testament that, you know, we're talking about Kentucky and you look at the losses they have on the defensive side of the ball, especially up front. Which I think plays into what you're getting at, and that we just kind of expect that traditionally they'll probably find the next wave of defensive guys to step in. But maybe that's not the case this year, just because of how many losses they had, and maybe they can't replicate that through the portal. Some of the early talk has been how maybe they're a little bit more accountable. They're sort of saying all the right things. I don't know. We'll have to see. I don't know if that necessarily translates into improvement, but if you're looking for optimism, track record plus maybe some changes certainly could help.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then last, save the best for the last, Steven. How about old Mississippi State? What is the biggest question mark for the Bulldogs?
Mike, I hate to be boring because I think it's pretty obvious. Our guy, Coleman Hutzler, he has got to show us something this spring on defense because these stats last year. 5 sacks in SEC play, over 7 yards a play allowed in SEC games, and nearly 40 points allowed in conference action. Not safe for work. Certainly not safe if you want to keep your job next year. So transfers, you know, they brought in over 10 transfers on the defensive side of the ball. Just in general, how much improvement is Mississippi State going to make on defense? because I think you trust Jeff Lebby to help this offense take a step forward next year.
Yeah, man, I hear it, Steven. I hear what you're saying, and I can't disagree with anything there. But also, man, they're having to replace a lot on the offensive side of the football too, because the guys that were making plays, they all got raided, and they're at Missouri, they're at LSU, they're at Texas A&M. You know, it's just it's a bad place to be right now as we're in this transition, and this is these teams I saved to the end. I mean, they kind of have a similar theme where they don't have the finances that some of the others do right now, and I think that is showing itself in a huge, huge way. So hopefully that'll get fixed with the incoming revenue sharing that's going to start July 1. That's going to be a godsend to programs like this. But until then, they don't have the ammunition, so to speak, to compete at a high level, I don't think.
I think that's fair, because it's hard to, especially in this era of college football, to go back to what we talked about earlier with like recruiting and developing talent and finding the right coaches. It's hard if you don't have the right funding to be able to execute that plan, because if you don't, you're kind of constantly in a rebuild every year because your best players are leaving. So you have to dip into the portal, which just kind of creates this cycle of starting over every year. So I think the hope has to be that last year was year zero. This is year one. The foundation is better. Revenue sharing, maybe some NIL dollars. They can start to keep some of these guys at home that shine in 2025, and things look a lot better for Mississippi State in 2026.
Mm-hmm. All right, Steven, that's over 90 minutes of SEC spring football topics. I don't know where else you're going to get it. Anything else, Steven? Closing thoughts before we end this one.
Mike, I know everyone's excited about the basketball tournament, but I'm just glad we can fill in a little bit of a football void this week, and I can't wait to read more about the starting battles on the offensive line at quarterbacks. So I'm just excited to have spring practice here. That'd be my final thought.
Yeah, isn't it great? Well, all these coaches are coming out and they're, you know, having comments, and we're seeing clips of action. I mean, the people that say spring football is dead, they were not even paying attention to begin with spring. So spring is in the air. It feels a great time for college football. All you junkies out there, we appreciate each and every one of you. Before we go, as always, Steven, can you tell? It looks like people can see on the screen already, but how can they follow you? How can they find your work?
Absolutely. AthlonSports.com is where you can read all my work. You can follow me over on Twitter at AthlonSteven and StevenLCFB over on Facebook and Instagram.
All right, Steven, thank you so much for all the knowledge you just dropped on us. Thank you to each and every one of you for tuning in. We'll catch you on the next one.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.